Activia offers a range of yogurts which are a delicious way to look after your gut health. From the fruit range with carefully selected ingredients to no added sugar and 0% fat offering, as well as a cereals range, there's an Activia for everyone. Made with a unique blend of 5 ferments, creating an irresistibly creamy texture, each pot of Activia is a source of calcium, making it the perfect addition to your daily routine. Activia helps support a healthy gut. Your gut is where it all begins.
The annual Easy Living Furniture Roadshow Sale ends this Sunday. This is your last chance to save big, as absolutely everything is reduced across sofas, dining, bedroom and accessories. We've got everything you need to create the perfect living space with affordable prices and unbeatable quality. And with interest-free finance available, now really is the time to visit your local Easy Living Furniture store. Don't miss out. Find your local store online at easylivingfurniture.ie.
You're listening to Real Health with me, Carl Henry, in association with Activia. Activia offers a range of yogurts that help support a healthy gut. Your gut is where it all begins. Welcome to Real Health with me, Carl Henry. Folks, today we're going to investigate the science-backed guide to nutrition and health in the new book, How to Eat and Still Lose Weight, by bariatric surgeon and author Dr. Andrew Jenkinson. As a distinguished surgeon and metabolic expert, he unveils strategies like aversion and mental reprogramming. He looks at how to navigate the challenges of food marketing, combat junk food influences, and grasp the science behind popular weight loss techniques. Andrew, welcome to the show. How are you?
Pretty good, Carl. Yeah, pleasure to be here.
I'm looking forward to this. I'm fascinated by the work that you do, and I'm fascinated by the kind of content. We're going to start by, at the beginning of the book, you chat about your friend Samer. Can you tell us a little bit about his story?
Yeah, so it sort of actually refers back to the first book, which was called Why We Eat Too Much, and that was sort of like a Sunday Times bestseller. And that basically told us all about how our metabolism, you know, really, really works and why it's so difficult for some people to lose weight on diet and exercise and things like that. And that book was like a great seller. And Penguin, the publishers, kept saying to me, when are you going to write another book? Don't leave it too late. But I had no new sort of inspiration. The only thing I had as feedback from the first book was some people had employed, you know, the strategies that I set out in the first book to lose weight, but they fell down because, you know, willpower was a big issue for them. You know, they find themselves going back into old bad habits quite easily. So Samer came into the story and inspired the second book. So he is a really interesting character. He's the translator. Whenever I go into a clinic in the UAE, he translates for me. So we've got a lot of, you know, Emirati patients. They're all clad up and things. And he translates into Arabic what we're saying. And we give him over dietary advice or injection therapy like Ozempic or bariatric surgery. So anyway, we were sitting outside between clinics one afternoon, and he said to me, you know something, Dr. Andrew, I used to suffer with obesity. I used to be 125 kilograms. And you look at him now, he's like in his sort of late 40s. He's slim, you know, good-looking, slim, confident man, maybe about 70, 75 kilograms. And I was sort of astounded that he had managed to maintain really quite phenomenal weight loss over a 10-year period. So most people, they can do light to light, and they can go down and lose 20, 30, 40 kilograms, but they just come back up. But he had managed to do it and sustain it for 10 years. So I was just really, really intrigued with his story. And he hadn't had the surgery, but he'd had the same effect as surgery. And basically, he had tried and learned how to lose weight, you know, slowly by trial and error. He said losing weight by dieting is like playing a guitar. You're going to like get better the more you try, and you're going to get disheartened, you know, half the time. But he had sort of eventually developed an aversion to processed and industrialized food. So he would, for instance, say to me, you know, if a fast food burger was the last thing on earth to eat, he wouldn't want to eat it. You know, he developed a total aversion to that type of food and a real love for, you know, healthy, nutritious food. And he became very, very, you know, aware of his own body. So he sort of totally changed his persona around just by educating himself about food. And that just inspired me to write the second book to try and, you know, bring in not just the concepts from the first book, what food does to your body, but also, you know, how your mind works and, you know, how habits and bad habits form and how to get out of them. So that was sort of, Samuel was a real inspiration. He came up with a load of great ideas for the book.
And it's an exceptional amount of weight loss, like that 40 to 50 kilograms over any time frame. And to keep it off, it's an exceptional amount of weight to lose.
Yeah, the same sort of weight you would expect. So if I'd done a gastric bypass on someone 125 kilograms, I'd say to them, look, you're going to be about 75, maybe 80 kilograms in a year, and you're going to maintain that if you're relatively healthy. I mean, Sam's story was that he had gone at the age of his mid-20s from Jordan when he was 80 kilograms to the UAE. He had a good job in the operating theatre. But the UAE is totally different. Now, 6 months a year, it is like a furnace. You know, you can't go outside. It's too hot. And before, he had been cooking with his family and friends. His mother had cooked for him, you know. But he got into this really bad habit of food deliveries. You know, he loved all the processed food because he hadn't really been exposed to it in Jordan. But his weight went from 80 to 90 to 100. Next thing you know, he's 125 kilograms. And he's really, really unhealthy, pre-diabetic, hypertensive, and started to really try and diet. He actually tried dieting for a 10-year period unsuccessfully at sort of a weight of 120, 125 kilograms. So that was his story. He just changed his food and stress environment and his body just went along with him.
And it's that awareness piece that I'm sure people listening to the show are screaming at me to ask you, that how did he create that awareness of real food and that concept of, you know, if the processed burger was the last food on earth that he'd never have it? How did he manage to do that?
So I was so fascinated by his story. And he's actually, he's a really sort of compelling conversationalist. And I sort of asked him the same question. So he basically, one morning when he was, you know, after he tried lots of different diets and things unsuccessfully, he was really unhappy, but trying to get on with life. And on the radio, he heard someone commenting on, but talking about having a glass of hot water with lemon squeezed in the morning. And that's the only thing you have for the first hour before you have breakfast, and how that would melt away some fat. And just that week, his colleague had been saying, oh, this is a really good method for starting weight loss. And so he tried it and actually did lose some weight, which probably was secondary to a degree of time-restricted eating, just delaying breakfast, maybe a bit of something to do with stimulating his metabolism in the morning. But he lost a few pounds, and that, you know, really stimulated him into thinking, it's not about the calories, it's about what the food is doing to me, what I put in my mouth is doing to me metabolically, what it's doing to change the signals in my body. And that was the first step. And then he decided to do the most difficult step, which was to give up sugar. He totally understood that sugar was a really bad thing for him metabolically. So he decided, okay, I'm going to give it up. It took him 40 days before his his cravings for sugar disappeared. And he said that 40 days was really actually quite difficult as far as willpower was concerned. You know, his friends were laughing at him and offering him sweets, and it took him a lot of willpower. It was very frustrating for him, but he managed to do it, and he lost another 10 kilograms. So he did little steps, you know, and each step, so the lemon and water, maybe 5K, giving up sugar another 10K. Next thing you know, he's down to, you know, 110. He then had this habit of mindlessly eating, you know, food in the evening, bad food, delivery food, watching Netflix and stuff like that. So he decided to change that, the snacks, for a freshly chopped sort of charcuterie board of raw vegetables, you know, carrots, cucumbers, tomatoes, a bit of salt, whatever. He'd just have it there to mindlessly snack on really good food rather than terrible food. And again, he lost another 10 kilograms. So all of these little steps that he did, he noticed a stepwise decrease in his weight. So he just became really aware of what food is doing to him, to his body, rather than being, you know, totally obsessed with calories, which most dieters are. You know, it's all about calories in, calories out. It's nothing to do with that. It's about what the food does to you. metabolically.
It's that conscious awareness of the food that goes in and what it's doing that he absolutely nailed by the sounds of it. Let's chat about leptin. Talk to me about leptin and how important leptin is.
So leptin is, if you understand leptin, you understand weight control. So basically all animals have a weight control system. Otherwise, wild animals would suddenly, develop obesity in times of food excess, et cetera, et cetera. So all wild animals have a leptin-type weight control hormone. And in humans, it's called leptin. So it comes from your fat cells. The fatter you are, the higher the signal of leptin in your bloodstream. And your brain can read that signal and it can tell how fat you are. So how much basically fuel reserve, what your petrol tank is, as it were, your gas tank. Humans and most wild animals will have a couple of months worth of energy. You don't need to carry more than a couple of months. If there's a famine, it's unlikely to last for more than 2 months, like a total famine. To carry more around actually is detrimental to survival. Okay, so, and this is why there is this sort of hormone and weight regulation. So as your fat levels go up, the signal goes to your brain, okay, we've got enough, we've got 2 months. Energy on board. We don't have to concentrate on eating, so we'll switch down the appetite and we'll switch up the metabolism. And automatically your weight is regulated. And it's like, as I go back to wild animals, when you're watching a nature documentary, you don't suddenly see a pride of lions becoming obese because there's too many antelope around. It doesn't happen. They have exactly the same weight regulation signals. So why do humans become obese? What's happening with that weight regulation signal? So when we change our diet towards a Western type diet, which has got a lot of sugar, refined carbohydrates, which basically becomes sugar within 5 minutes of eating it. We're talking about things with flour in, so bread, biscuits, cakes, processed foods, and a lot of snacking between meals, our insulin levels increase, and insulin blocks that signal of leptin to your brain. So despite you having 2 months worth of energy on board and enough, suddenly, because you're eating the wrong food, which is blocking that signal, your brain can't see it. And in fact, it can't see much at all. It can't see anything in the gas tank, and it wants you to carry on putting weight on. And this is why when you look around the high streets, you'll see people with the condition, which I would call a disease, because it is. It's caused by blockage of this weight regulation hormone, walking around with 6 months, or at the extreme, they could survive a year without eating. These extremely obese people who are 30 stone. And that's because their weight regulation signal, which is called leptin, is blocked.
And is that where the medication argument comes in for people who have obesity in the extreme like that, who are maybe 30 stone or 30 stone plus? Is that where the medication comes in, or does that play a role for that weight range?
You talk about Ozempic.
Mm.
So Ozempic basically, it doesn't really affect the, we haven't got onto the weight set point, so which is to do with, leptin resistance as well. Ozempic is probably better for people who are just struggling and getting towards obesity. But if you have severe obesity, even if you change your habits around, it's really difficult to come back down to a natural weight unless you really get it like Sama. And in those circumstances, then maybe bariatric surgery is a good thing to consider. But I think injection treatment is Ozempic. It's a great treatment. The problem with it is that when you come off the treatment, you tend to put the weight back on. But that blocks, when you go on a low-calorie diet, it blocks the appetite signal that you would normally get, which will stop you going on the diet because you're craving calories so much.
It's very trendy globally right now, but particularly in Ireland. Chat to me about the individual's weight set point then. So that's the next thing I want to talk about.
This is the thing that's described in the first book and why it became a sort of bestseller, because it explains obesity as a disease and why some people just can't lose weight through dieting and end up seeing me in the clinic and asking me to remove their stomach, drastic interventions. Why would that happen? Must be something, that you can't, change with the advice that we're being given at the moment. So basically, the weight set point is your individual weight setting, or almost like a weight anchor. It's what your body wants your weight to be. And it's dependent on your genes. So some people are just from slim families and they can't put weight on even if they try. Some people really can put weight on very, very easily, and some people are in between. So it depends on your genes, but also your environment. So if you happen to be in an environment where there is natural non-processed foods, and we're not dependent on going to Tesco's for our food, but actually it's cooked from fresh, like developing world countries, then you tend not to get, the trigger to put weight on, because you're living with much more natural foods that are not going to block that, that natural weight regulation hormone leptin. However, if you've got genes that are, inclined to gain weight in a particular environment, and you're in that environment, Western food and stress environment, then your weight setting is going to go up. That weight anchor or weight set point is going to go up. When you try and run away from that weight setting by dieting or by going to the gym, your metabolic response, your body's response, is to say, okay, no, we don't like this. We want to get you back towards whatever you were, 120 kilograms, whatever. So for instance, when you do go on a diet, you become very, very hungry and your metabolism collapses, so you're not actually expending much energy and you're pulled back towards your weight setting. The whole concept of the first book, and this is covered in the second book as well, is if you understand your weight setting, you understand why it is at a particular level, then you can adjust that down. So, and it's particularly to do with food and stress. So if you understand that sugar, refined carbohydrates, and that foods that are included in processed food, particularly vegetable oils, which really muck up your omega-3, 6 essential fatty acids and insulin signaling and things like that. These things, if you understand that, if you avoid those things and go back to a much more natural way of eating, not concentrating on calories, but actually concentrating on getting rid of all that bad foods, your weight setting will automatically come down. And it's not just food. There is things like sleep. If you have difficulty sleeping, your weight setting is going to go higher. And if you have a lot of stress in work or family, your cortisol level is going to be high. It's going to be really difficult for you to lose weight. So all of these things, when you understand why your weight setting is set at a particular level, it's much easier then to gain some control and change these factors, and your weight will come off seamlessly.
Chatting about the characteristics of ultra-processed foods, so we've mentioned them time and time again over the course of the last kind of 10, 15 minutes or so. And in the modern kitchen, there are certain characteristics that most ultra-processed foods will have.
Yeah, so I think there's like a bit of a parody in, I think it's the second chapter in the book, where I'm in this modern kitchen of the future and we're trying to produce a Pringle-type crisp. And it sort of basically says, check away all of your fresh ingredients. All you need is various different types of flours and flavorings and colorings and emulsifiers and anti-caking agents, et cetera, et cetera. And it takes you through, this slightly, I hope it's readable, sort of parody about, what you're putting in. And then we sort of seal up the canisters and put them in the basement. And your friends come around a year down the line, because we know processed foods last for ages because they've got all these antioxidant and anti-caking and preservation agents. And you go down, get your homemade snack, dust off the cobwebs, and hand them out to your friends who love them, because it lights up their very vulnerable, almost primate human brains that we love sweet, we love high calorie, we love colorful foods, But the thing that we never really pick it up when we're down the supermarket and getting, some processed food that probably was made a year before. If you left that jar or canister out, for a year, it wouldn't look very nice. It would be faded, it would be dusty, and you'd think, oh God. But they keep the packaging really clean for us, so it's sort of, we think it's been made a week before.
So the real simple advice for people is switch to back to cooking basics and eating real food, cooking real food. You've mentioned vegetable oils several times over the course of the last few minutes. Chat to us about those and the impact that they're having on our health.
So, yeah, I mean, we talked a little bit about sugar and refined carbohydrates, and that's very simple, that you know, blocks the weight control signal leptin and causes weight gain. The slightly newer concept, again, that I introduced in the first book, is that obesity could be in the future recognized actually as a form of a type of deficiency disease. And, you know, historically, we've had a couple of diseases. We had scurvy and we had beriberi that were vitamin deficiencies. And we didn't understand them for hundreds of years. Lots of people died from them. You know, there were endemic diseases affecting armies and sailors and whatever. But actually, there were vitamin deficiencies. And in fact, they were blamed, you know, just like obesity, some people say it's a condition caused by character, i.e. lack of willpower, being greedy, being lazy, whatever. In the same circumstances, these historical diseases, you know, were blamed on people's personality as well before we understood them. So we now have a situation where we know there is two, what is called polyunsaturated fatty acids. So these are not saturated fats and not monounsaturated fats like olive oil, but in between, so vegetable oils, so canola oil, seed oil, sunflower oil, all of these things that we're told are like really, really good and heart healthy for us. Anyway, these things contain the essential fatty acid omega-6. And omega-6 fights against omega-3 in our bodies, or basically there is a balance between omega-3 and omega-6. And these fatty acids are what we call essential. So we can't make them in our bodies. We are reliant on taking them in through our diets. Historically, we have a ratio of omega-3 to omega-6 of 1:1:1:4 in favor of omega-6. But now that we're sort of, our diet is infused with vegetable oils, you know, fried foods, fast foods, processed foods with lots of vegetable oil in it because it's very stable, it doesn't oxidize. You know, our ratio of omega-3 to 6 is about 16 to 20 to 1. So this really means we have a relative deficiency all of a sudden of what is actually quite a health-giving, you know, fat, omega-3. It's been washed away by or diluted by omega-6 in our Western diet. Omega-3 is and basically there's a ratio on every single cell of our bodies. Both of these fatty acids are there in a particular ratio. It should be 1:4 maximum. When we have a relative deficiency of omega-3, our insulin doesn't signal properly and we become more pro-inflammatory. This sort of, you then look at populations that are exposed to Western diet. What do they suffer with? They suffer with obesity and inflammatory Western diseases, you know, such as arthritis, skin conditions, asthma, inflammatory bowel disease, this sort of thing. And my sort of take on it is that it's probably due to a relative deficiency of omega-3, but we don't really understand that yet because, you know, the science of these new fats is only just, it's like only just forming. It's like our understanding of vitamins 100 years ago. So it may be in the future that actually we understand obesity as, you know, it was a deficiency type disease like scurvy or beriberi. And, you know, the advice in the book is to try and normalize your omega-3 6 ratio. So you've got to chuck away all the vegetable oils. Don't cook with that at all. Cook with either butter, ghee, or olive oil. Obviously, don't consume, you know, processed foods, fast foods that are going to sit on a supermarket shelf for 6 months, but actually try and consume foods containing omega-3. Omega-3 is very unstable. It oxidizes really fast, which is why it's not, you know, good for food companies. That type of foods like fish and green vegetables and stuff like that, they will go off after a few days. That's what contains omega-3. And it's a really, really good fat to have. So if you can, you know, understand that ratio and slowly normalize it. It could take a year, but actually, if you can normalize it, your body is so different, you know. Your body is able to process insulin properly. You know, that you don't have to have so much insulin that it's blocking leptin, your weight control hormone. You know, your inflammatory problems will go away. you'll just feel much, much better in yourself. So I think, you know, that omega-3, omega-6 vegetable oil thing is really critical in weight control. And I think it's something that most commentators have so far missed. I think they're slowly picking up on it. I tell my patients, you know, maybe use that time to go shopping for fresh food and cook something. It's much better for your weight than trying to expend 2 hours, you know, walking 10,000 steps. So that whole sort of 10,000 step myth comes from the Tokyo Olympics in the 1960s. And there was an advertising campaign for a primitive type of pedometer. And the Japanese icon for 10,000 looks like a man who's walking. And that's where it all came from. It was like an advertising campaign, but no one's ever done any science behind it.
I could talk shop all day with you. You're absolutely fascinating. The key thing, I suppose, to summarize from our chat is, you know, eat real foods. Eat that, like your friend in the UAE, it's like Samara did, the awareness of food. Move intensely, move the body a little bit more, and cook more from scratch. The book is out in the shops now, your second book, How to Eat and Still Lose Weight. Dr. Andrew Jenkinson, we really enjoyed the chat. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll catch up in person very, very soon. Folks, I really hope you enjoyed today's episode of Real Health with me, Carl Henry. A fascinating episode. Eat well, eat healthy, cook more, and we really hope that you enjoyed the ep. As ever, we'll see you next week for more Real Health. So long, folks.